Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for April 2nd, 2015 on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm your host, Esther Averam. Well, according to the Academy of American Poets, National Poetry Month is the largest literary celebration in the world, with tens of millions of readers, students, teachers, librarians, booksellers, literary events, curators, publishers, bloggers, and of course, poets, marking poetry's important place in our culture and our lives. Well, on Saturday, I was invited by D.C.'s Champion Youth Slam Team and Split This Rock to read with them on a program at the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum in honor of the exhibit Freedom Just Around the Corner, Black America from Civil War to Civil Rights. The exhibit marks 150 years since the end of the Civil War and the abolition of slavery throughout the United States. It highlights letters carried by enslaved Americans, mail sent by and to leaders of the Civil Rights Movement, and original artwork for those numerous stamps that we call black stamps issued by the United States Postal Service. And Gerald Horn will join us to discuss the latest media excursion into race. As always, we have a lot for you in this less than an hour, starting with headlines and happenings. In Pennsylvania, imprisoned journalist and former Black Panther Mumia Abu-Jamal remains in the intensive care unit of a local hospital after he was removed from prison for a medical emergency without notification to his family, friends, or lawyers. Friends say they were told that he was in diabetic shock. Noel Hanrahan, producer of Prison Radio, which distributes Abu-Jamal's commentaries from prison, distributed an email yesterday urging the public to keep pressure on state prison authorities because Mumia's wife, Wadia Jamal, and older brother Keith Cook were prevented from visiting him on yesterday. Recently released video shows police in the Detroit suburb of Inkster pummeling and tasing a 57-year-old unarmed African-American auto worker. The video shows Officer William Melendez approaching Floyd Dent's car with his gun drawn. Another officer pulls Dent to the ground, and Melendez places him in a chokehold and pounds him in the head 16 times. Dent said he thought he was going to die.
I'm lucky to be living. You know, because I think they were trying to kill me, especially when they had choked me, you know. I was on my last breath. I had told the officer, please, I can't breathe.
Police claim Dent threatened and bit them, although they have provided no evidence. They also claim they found crack cocaine in his car, but Dent says the drugs were planted, and his drug test came back clean. Melendez, the officer who pummeled Dent, is nicknamed RoboCop and has been sued repeatedly for excessive force. During an earlier stint in Detroit, he was indicted for leading a corrupt ring of officers who planted evidence, although he was ultimately acquitted. In 1996, he and a partner shot and killed unarmed African-American Lou Adkins in a case Detroit paid $1 million to settle. In Quebec, an 18-year-old student says she will press charges against a Quebec City police officer after she was hit in the face by a tear gas canister. Naomi Trudeau Tremblay was participating in protests against austerity cuts in the provincial budget when an officer fired the tear gas canister into her face at point-blank range. New figures show Israel killed more Palestinians last year than in any other since occupying the West Bank and Gaza in 1967. The United Nations says Israel was responsible for more than 2,300 Palestinian deaths and 17,000 injuries in 2014. The bulk of the casualties came from Israel's 50-day assault on the Gaza Strip, which killed at least 551 children. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, Israel forces have shot at least 30 children in the West Bank and East Jerusalem during protests in the first 3 months of this year. Also, Palestine has officially become a member of the International Criminal Court. The Palestinian Authority joined the ICC earlier this year after the United States and Israel successfully lobbied against a UN Security Council measure calling for an end to the Israeli occupation and the establishment of a Palestinian state by 2017. Palestinian negotiator Saab Erekat said the court has already opened a preliminary inquiry into possible war crimes committed by Israel in the occupied territories.
The court had already begun a preliminary examination, and we hope that those who are trying to pressure Palestine not to make reference to the court, we are the victims here. They should go to the criminals and ask them to stop committing crimes. Settlement activities, dictations, demolishing of homes, the continuation of occupation are all war crimes, and Israel will be held accountable.
Israel had retaliated against the ICC bid by withholding hundreds of millions in Palestinian tax revenue needed to pay salaries and provide public services. But it recently released some funds in a bid to ease tensions with the United States and avert the Palestinian Authority's collapse. A new report commissioned by the Colombian government and FARC rebels has concluded U.S. soldiers and military contractors sexually abused at least 54 children in Colombia between 2003 and 2007. The investigator cites one case where 53 girls in the town of Melgar were targeted by contractors who filmed the abuse and sold the films as pornography. In another case, a 12-year-old girl was allegedly drugged and raped by a U.S. Army sergeant and a contractor. Under immunity agreements, none of the alleged abusers were ever punished. The media group FAIR notes the story has received no coverage in the U.S. corporate media. A number of U.S. outlets have reported on a new Justice Department probe, which concludes U.S. drug enforcement agents in Colombia participated in so-called sex parties with prostitutes hired by Colombian drug cartels. And in our culture and media moment, here in D.C. tonight, beginning at 6 p.m., poet-activist Mark Nowak will be honored as the 2015 winner of the Freedom Plow Award for Poetry and Activism, which recognizes and honors a poet who is doing innovative and transformative work at the intersection of poetry and social change. Nowak has a long-time commitment to labor issues. Encouraging deep worker solidarity, he exposes every mining disaster in the world through his blog and facilitates poetry dialogues among workers across the globe. Mark is the author of 3 books of poetry, all of which can be viewed as studies of labor economy under global capitalism. That's the Freedom Plow Award for Poetry and Activism being awarded tonight in a reception and program beginning at 6 p.m. at the Arts Club of Washington, 2017 I Street in Northwest D.C. For more information, go to splitthisrock.org. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, author and activist Gerald Horn is back in town this weekend and stops by to talk to us about the latest foray by corporate media into the realm of race. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. And for this segment, I'm here with Gerald Horn, author and activist professor at the University of Houston. Welcome back to D.C., Gerald.
Well, thank you.
So you want to talk about this recent report on NPR. I mean, to tell you the truth, you're a better person than me because I'm just really tired of these types of reports that seem to always just wind up blaming black people for racism. But we'll get to that. You're here because you're going to be at Sankofa this weekend. Why don't we start with that? That's a more positive note.
Yeah, I'll be having a book signing and lecture at Sankofa on Saturday, April 4th, at 6 p.m. As you know, that's on Georgia Avenue, right across the street from Howard University. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Howard University, I'll be lecturing there in the library on Friday, April 3rd at 5:30 on W.E.B. Du Bois as part of a conference. But in any case, with regard to this NPR report, I was struck by it. The thrust of the report was this idea that black men are feared. And they interviewed a number of black men who talked about their various episodes. They didn't report the possibly apocryphal story involving baseball slugger Reggie Jackson during his heyday living in New York when he gets on an elevator with his German Shepherd dog and he said, "Sit," and all the white people in the elevator sit on the floor, you see. I mean, that's a joke. But it had that sort of tone, so to speak. What struck me was not really getting to the heart of the matter, not peeling away the leaves of the onion to get to the heart of the matter. And obviously the heart of the matter is something I talk about in this book that I'm going to be talking about at Sankofa, the book on 1776, trying to revise the history, the creation myth of the United States. That is to say, one of the major reasons why black men are feared was because this country was born in no small measure in a revolt against the abolition of slavery. That is to say, Britain was moving towards abolition. The slave-owning class here in North America were not in favor. And so they revolted. It's not unlike the Rhodesian revolt in 1965, where they revolt against Britain because Britain is moving towards decolonization. One person, one vote. They didn't like that, so they revolted. Yeah. And, of course, the Africans were not in favor of a republic based upon slavery. And so they largely sided with the British. And of course, part of that's reflected in the Book of Negroes, that TV show that was on BET some weeks ago, which is now available on Netflix, by the way.
Oh, tell us about it. I think I missed that. The Book of Negroes?
Yeah, it's a dramatization. It's sort of like the Canadian Roots, because, of course, many of the Africans then wound up, who fought with Britain, they wound up fleeing to Canada. Many of them wound up in Sierra Leone, a British colony, etc. And so instead of, in terms of that conflict, the Madisons and Jeffersons and Washingtons being portrayed as these heroic figures, they're in many ways being portrayed as antagonists, as villains, so to speak. So I think that what I'm trying to say in this book is that it's too much of this blaming the victim in the discourse on black people. It's almost as if they're trying to say that, well, the reason you're despised is because you don't act right. Basically, if you would pull up your socks, you'd get better treatment. I mean, that's basically the lie, which is obviously ludicrous, but it's obviously a quite profound blind spot.
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting that this article, this piece on NPR, it approaches the whole idea approaches black men through the lens of fear.
Right.
And rather than through the violence, which is what's really happening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so, mm-hmm. And then the other thing I noticed that is that it doesn't talk about racism at all.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. It's another piece that talks about race, R-A-C-E, mm-hmm. but not racism.
Right.
And right. I'm wondering if you see this as just kind of just more of the same. Is this a trend in this type of popular literature that, or popular media, where they talk about race but not racism?
Well, absolutely it is. I mean, it would be interesting for some communication scholar or some rhetoric scholar to trace the invocation of the term race over the past few decades and how it sort of slowly but gradually pushes the term racism out of the arena. Because that's fundamentally what's happened, and those of us who've lived for this era have seen it happen. And obviously, this is part and parcel of the rise of the right wing in the United States of America, the rise of the right wing globally and transnationally. And sadly, we're a prime victim of this very unfortunate process.
I saw another piece, I don't know whether it was part of it or a follow-up, and it was by a black writer named Gene Demby, and he wrote that, you know, sometimes, you know, I know from, like, working in corporate media, sometimes the headline that gets put on your piece is not really what you would have put on it.
For sure.
So they titled this piece, How It Feels to Be a Problem.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, but, you know, that's a rhetoric from Du Bois from about 115 years ago, and an essay that he wrote. But in some ways, it's sort of ancient rhetoric. I mean, I'm not sure if we should be conceptualizing ourselves in that way in 2015. Perhaps it was appropriate for 1900, perhaps. But in many ways, of course, that's how we're viewed. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how even progressive people in the United States, that is to say, Euro-Americans, how it seems like they seem to always want to, like, meet together and have conferences where no people of color are invited. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they're trying to recreate the White Republic. They're trying to recreate the founding. And to a degree, in some ways, they're being true to the origins of the United States. The problem is, of course, you're not allowed to talk about the true origins of the United States. You're only allowed to talk about the mythological origins. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's so confusing to so many people, and why these progressives continue to try to recreate the White Republic.
And, you know, actually when I read his piece, he was kind of saying the opposite. He was talking about how, despite the ways you feel, the ways that you might fear me, I really like being a black man. You know, he basically was saying, you may not know this, people, but I'm okay. I'm okay mm-hmm. with me, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, as an historian, how do you kind of address this duality? I guess it is old. It's the same two souls thing we're still talking about. But
double consciousness, et
right.
cetera.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that actually, that happens to be part of what we're going to be talking about at this Du Bois conference at Howard on Friday, April 3rd. But
so can the public come to that?
Also, absolutely. I mean, this is a public institution. I mean, the only problem might be seating. So I would urge people to get there early.
And where is it going to be on campus?
The library. You know, that conference room right inside at the library at Howard.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, just tell me again the time and day for your Sankofa reading.
That'll be 6 p.m. on Saturday, April 4th, of course, sadly and tragically, the anniversary of the slaying of Martin Luther King in 1968. Of course, Sankofa is right across the street from Howard University on Georgia Avenue. I think the address is 2714 Georgia Avenue Northwest. And it should be a festive occasion, hopefully intellectually stimulating, and each and every one of you are invited.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for spending time with us again, and you'll be back again, and we'll have you here for WPFW for sure.
Well, I hope so.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
For the community comment portion of our show today, we are honoring National Poetry Month, and we're going to hear voices of poets, starting with Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, a poet from the Marshall Islands who spoke at the UN Climate Leaders Summit last year.
Our next speaker was selected from more than 500 candidates to represent the voice of civil society. From the Marshall Islands, please welcome Kathy Jetnell Kitchener.
Mm-hmm. Yawekomolib. My family and I have traveled a long way to be here today, all the way from the Marshall Islands. The Marshall Islands encompasses more than 2 million square kilometers of ocean, and so it makes sense that our culture is one of voyaging and navigation. One of our most beloved legends features a canoe race between 10 brothers. Their mother, holding a heavy bundle, begged each of her sons for a ride on their canoe. But only the youngest listened and took her along for the ride, not knowing that his mother was carrying the first sail. With the sail, he won the race and became chief. The moral of the story is to honor your mother and the challenges life brings. Climate change is a challenge that few want to take on, but the price of inaction is so high. Those of us from Oceania are already experiencing it firsthand. We've seen waves crashing into our homes and our breadfruit trees wither from the salt and drought. We look at our children and wonder how they will know themselves or their culture should we lose our islands. Climate change affects not only us islanders, it threatens the entire world. To tackle it, we need a radical change of course. This isn't easy, I know. It means ending carbon pollution within my lifetime. It means supporting those of us most affected to prepare for unavoidable climate impacts. And it means taking responsibility for irreversible loss and damage caused by greenhouse gas emissions. The people who support this movement are Indigenous mothers like me, families like mine, and millions more, standing up for the changes needed and working to make them happen. I ask world leaders to take us all along on your ride. We won't slow you down. We'll help you win the most important race of all, the race to save humanity. I would now like to share with you a poem that I have written for my daughter, Matefele Benam. Dear Matefele Benam, you are a seven-month-old sunrise of gummy smiles. You are bald as an egg and bald as a Buddha. You are thighs that are thunder, shrieks that are lightning, so excited for bananas, hugs, and our morning walks along the lagoon. Dear Matefele Benam, I want to tell you about that lagoon. That lazy, lounging lagoon, lounging against the sunrise. Men say that one day that lagoon will devour you. They say it will gnaw at the shoreline, chew at the roots of your breadfruit trees, gulp down rows of seawalls, and crunch through your island's shattered bones. They say you, your daughter, and your granddaughter too, will wander rootless with only a passport to call home. Dear Matefele Benam, don't cry. Mommy promises you no one will come and devour you. No greedy whale of a company sharking through political seas. No backwater bullying of businesses with broken morals. No blindfolded bureaucracies gonna push this mother ocean over the edge. No one's drowning, baby. No one's moving. No one's losing their homeland. No one's becoming a climate change refugee. Or should I say, no one else. To the Carteret Islanders of Papua New Guinea and to the Taro Islanders of Fiji, I take this moment to apologize to you. We are drawing the line here because we, baby, are going to fight. Your mommy, daddy, boo-boo, jima, your country, and your president too, we will all fight. And even though there are those hidden behind platinum titles who like to pretend that we don't exist, who like to pretend that the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Kiribati, Maldives, Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, floods of Algeria, Colombia, Pakistan, and all the hurricanes, earthquakes, and tidal waves didn't exist? Still, there are those who see us, hands reaching out, fists raising up, banners unfurling, megaphones booming, and we are canoes blocking coal ships. We are the radiance of solar villages. We are the fresh, clean soil of the farmers' past. We are teenagers, blooming petitions. We are families, biking, recycling, reusing, engineers, building, dreaming, designing, artists, painting, dancing, writing, and we are spreading the word. And there are thousands out on the streets, marching hand in hand, chanting for change now. And they're marching for you, baby. They're marching for us, because we deserve to do more than just survive. We deserve to thrive. Dear Matafele Benum, you are eyes heavy with drowsy weight. So just close those eyes and sleep in peace, because we won't let you down. You'll see.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition on WPFW Washington, 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. And you just heard Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, a poet from the Marshall Islands who spoke at the UN Climate Leaders Summit last year. When we come back, voices of poets right here in the DMV. Stay with us.
Free from conceiving.
That was Stevie Wonder on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on WPFW Washington 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam, continuing our special Community Watch and Comment devoted to the voices of poets for National Poetry Month, which is every April. Up next, two young men, two poets, ELPJ and Tomcat, who I heard at the February celebration for the release of all members of the Cuban Five.
Things fall all of the time. Taste the dirt down bottom. How black, how dark it gets in the under. How south we sink when we think of ourselves so sick. The first time that death braided its hands around my heartstrings, I cried tears of lead. Heavy sobs that anchor to ankle dragged me into a dark pit. I've learned how lonely it can be in the bottom. People will be willing to watch you from up above. They will wonder where you went but won't want to wander in after you. Friends fall like London. Bridges burn when people see how far away you are, how out of reach you seek. They will subtract themselves from your life lest they go tumbling. After all of this misery acquires acute company. They do not consider how much you need them to be a phone call, a light in the darkness, or at the very least a hug. Things plummet like pigeons pelting glass, fall like angels crashing into people. We are all Icarus wrapped in stars. The time will topple into seasons. Depression can dig you a ditch and leave you dead in the dark, and it hurts. And you hate how hard you have to hug yourself to this earth. I understand the difficulty of standing under so much darkness. There is nothing worse in this whole wide world than to wake up upset that you did not die. The last time I had a heart to hell with death, it was my baby sister's birthday, and she went from newborn to nowhere in a matter of weeks. The past can offer so much perspective. I now know how it is a privilege to be able to even feel pain, how I am lucky to have a beach in this broken heart, that the darkness, the down under, is nothing compared to being nothing. So let's think angels, think phoenix, think falling can sometimes feel like flying backwards. It is in this darkness that we realize our feathers, right? Realize that no eclipse can clip our wings. We people are resilient creatures. We bounce back rubber band like we all sometimes feel a season after summer. So flap your wings. Illuminate the sky. You know, few things fly. Few things rise. Sun. Tide. Cuban Five. Me. You.
Gerardo Hernandez.
Rene Gonzalez.
Ramon Labanino.
Fernando Gonzalez.
Antonia Guerrero.
Do not forget their names.
Gerardo Hernandez.
Rene Gonzalez.
Ramon Labanino.
Fernando Gonzalez.
Antonia Guerrero.
Five men sent from Cuba to Florida with a mission.
Gerardo Hernandez.
Rene Gonzalez.
Ramon Labanino.
Fernando Gonzalez.
Antonia Guerrero.
Five men taken as terrorists when all they were trying to do was keep their own people safe from attack. When I hear stories like this, ones about brown brothers found under the heel of America's boot, I am not surprised.
Injustice within the justice system be second nature, so we go numb to the crimes of the country we reside in.
But I refuse to be desensitized any longer. Let us not forget history has adopted an obligation to repeat itself. We are stuck not in a broken, but a stuttering system.
There is nothing missing.
You cannot be surprised by a cycle. We have been seeing Cuban Five multiplied.
People placed behind bars, left to lie in the cracks of this government.
Men meant to be muzzled into a memory. It still stings to know that this nation can hold the rights of political prisoners hostage while police parade around running down innocent brown things, turning kids into corpses. Let us not forget
that while the Cuban Five remain trapped, the real criminals wear badges.
Sit in Congress.
Bury bullets or bombs into foreign lands.
The real criminals cower under a cloak of patriotism, nationalism, refusing to call it what it is. Racism, greed, secrecy. The Cuban Five are an issue because they are not the only issue. Gerardo Hernandez.
Rene Gonzalez.
Ramon Labanino.
Fernando Gonzalez.
Antonia Guerrero.
Do not forget their names. These men are part of a long history of people made prisoners, but we refuse to let them be thrown into a sea of injustice, where many have already drowned trying to fight for their own humanity. When I hear stories like this, I'm not given the option of shock. Instead, something inside of me cringes and dies. But I'm not surprised. I am
awoke,
alert, always willing to tell the stories and fight for the freedom of those buried behind bars. Peace, everybody.
Those were the poets ELPJ and Tomcat performing at the celebration for the release of the Cuban Five in February. Up next, poet Nikki Hurd and voices from the DC Youth Slam Team performing in a special program this last Saturday in connection with the exhibit Freedom Just Around the Corner, Black America from Civil War to Civil Rights, which is on view at the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum. The exhibit marks 150 years since the end of the Civil War and the abolition of slavery throughout the United States. It highlights letters carried by enslaved Americans, mail sent by and to leaders of the Civil Rights Movement, and original artwork for those stamps that we call black stamps issued by the United States Postal Service. Up next will be Hannah Smallwood, Galen Smith, Millie Mahari, Bobby Johnson, and also a group poem featuring Shayla Johnson and Kenya Newsom, and also someone not part of the Youth Slam team, poet Nikki Hurd.
You notice you're here mostly late at night, on dark, empty streets, in silent, empty trains, but the fear is always there, curled in the back of your mind, your constant companion, awake in a millisecond. Try and comfort yourself. You practice the lies you pretend would deter them until you can taste them on the back of your tongue, mixing with the bile. They are more real than anything else about you. You pretend they could save you. Your dad is a cop. Your brother, a Marine. You live in that house right there. See the lights on? They would hear you. Your dad's a reporter. Your brother is 12 and 4'10". You live 9 blocks away. No one can hear you. You are terrified. So you whisper your lies to the night and silently cry out in fear, but it should be in anger. You should be angry. Fear and silence and shame is what you were taught. The legacy passed down to you in wolf whistles and catcalls, in whispers in hallways and classrooms, in music and movies, in books and lessons, in newspapers and speeches, in the silence and the unwritten, in their refusal to look you in the eye. You were taught to hide. But why did no one teach the boys to not whisper, to not grope, to listen, to know? Why did no one teach the boys who would grow to be men, who would catcall and wolf listen, harass and rape? Why didn't they teach them? Why didn't they tell you it wasn't okay? Teach you to demand eye contact, respect, silence. Why didn't they tell you it wasn't your fault? It wasn't your fault. It was not your fault. It is not your fault. You should be angry, but instead you dream of a future where you are unafraid and unashamed. You wake up, you are 12, standing on a street corner. The man next to you looks you up and down, but never meets your eyes, says hello to your chest. You are wearing a heavy sweater and jeans, but have never felt so naked. You wake up, you are 13, on a red line train, just trying to go home. The middle-aged man next to you thinks your birthmark is a hickey and asks if you want help with another one. After you get off, 7 stops before your own, you realize the thing poking you was not in his pocket. You wake up. You are 14, waiting for your bus. An old man keeps giving you chocolate and compliments, and you are so afraid he's trying to drug you. You wash your hands over and over and over again. You wake up. You are 15. You wake up. You are 16. You wake up. You are screaming because you can no longer imagine a future where you are unafraid and unashamed. Why is it so hard to claim this fear? How can your story be both cliché and untold? And even after months of trying, you still can't say it in first person. Can I do an energy check real quick? Because I'm getting a little tired. When I say poetry, y'all say rocks. Poetry?
Rocks!
Poetry?
Rocks!
When I say to be, y'all say her. To be?
Her!
To be?
Her!
To be?
Her!
Coming up next, we've got... Let's make a whole lot of noise for Nikki Hurd! Woo!
Damn. I was going to say something else, but I can't say that. All right. Two poems. Election Day. I come from the land of I can. I am the bastard child of I can. Without a name, I listen to the women folks say, this is my home, what I say goes. And I listen to the men folk with their important talk say, this is my home, my country, my land, and what I say goes. And I am fingers tinted with workday sun and red clay dirt sifted through the heels and hymns of black folk. And I am a foreign tongue engraved with lash and whip, my blood bright as bougainvillea. I am a woman gifted to those whose skin makes of them a whole, not a fraction of a man. I come from the land of I can. I am ocean and river of West Africa and West Indies, of tobacco leaf and sugar cane. And I am sea creature and sediment, the sunken black body, the ocean floor. I am owned of house and field from Jack's son and John's son, and I am shuffle and sambo of Confederate flag and this United States of America flag. I am Legba and Lord, smell of mango skin and callaloo, of reservation and plantation. See, I am cool as the shade of the fullest oak tree, under which sways the names and bones of a people. I am a vote in Florida, unwanted and uncounted. I am a yes and a pair of syllables in the words we can. Song of shackle and segregation, whisper of a sign that reads four colors only. I am trace of waterline stitched to tree bark and Gulf air in a place called New Orleans. In this year of 2008, I am stitched to everything, waiting, waiting, and waiting. Vernacular. Collard greens, the running man, million man march. Someone new who blew up America, TCB, blow dry Afro sheen, blue blacks, Afro pucks, Bernie Mac, preach it, brother, I got your back. Tell it like it is, J to the Z, I have a dream, Malcolm after the Mecca of love supreme. Finger waves, the bluest eye on the down low, sister outsider, hustle and flow. Amazing Grace, Cornell, Denzel, Red Bones, Neo Soul, Pigtails, Black Eyed Peas, Electric Slide, Katrina, Gina, five on the black hand side. Woo! Baldwin say, next time there will be fire, as in the roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water, black art music ain't dead. In the name of Miles, Marvin, Mahalia, we have said, we say, amen.
All right, so moving things right along, we have your next wonderful poet about to come and grace the stage for y'all. Give it up for Galen!
Hi, everybody. If I am both black and woman, do I even exist? Magazines do not reflect back to me images of my own beauty. Mainstream stores label my hair as ethnic and only give me a few options. TV shows present me with weak-willed and easily influenced women who cannot function without men and my importance. In a world where my sisters can disappear, their songs stop being sung when our attention spans become shorter than their own lives, we might sing about you when you're gone, and few others will sing about you when you're here. I have learned that black will be forgotten. Black girl be mystery. Black girl stand up a little bit straighter so that they can see you. Black girl pronounce the endings of words so that they can understand you. Black girl relax your grandmother stories out of your hair. Black girl be light. Black girl be agreeable. Black girl smile and hide the pain of knowing you're always going to be two steps behind correction going to. You are always going to be two steps behind. You will never be equal. And when you articulate your story, you will always be angry. Black girl. That will always be the adjective they use to describe you. But remember, remember, you are not just a black girl, but colored girls who have considered climbing, straightening, hiding, silencing, starving, running, or conforming for anyone else don't. We you. We are both Beyonce and Nikita and everything else in between. We are more than our bodies. We are both struggle and success. We are both pronunciation and dropping off endings. We tend to roll our necks and use our hands because it helps us express ourselves better. We are not just black and woman. Both are incidentals of who we are. They should neither define us nor confine us. So my sisters, be beautiful, be bold, fly. And I promise we will sing about you.
You've seen her once before, but now she's got a mini piece for you. I'd like you to put your hands together and give a whole warm bowl of love to my friend, Millie!
Thank you for listening to us. I just want to really quickly say today we've gotten the opportunity to talk about conflict or struggles that we see in our life, and this poem I'm about to share with you is one of mine as an immigrant. I constantly count in my head the number of young, proud nationalists becoming refugees. Eritrea is the only place I have ever known to be the true Mecca to my heart, but it tends to be the hells that people live in. You see, every year, thousands of people flee the country. Many are kidnapped and decapitated, or they drown in the European Sea. While I'm in class, I never cease to think of my past and the present predicament my country finds itself in. You see, frustration builds up in me, and I want to go back and help, but though my intentions are sincere, I have to stay here to be a used to a country that has been raped and abused by leaders who claim to be saviors. So I count refugees that run away from their home, their country, and they tend to be my cousins, and I tend to like knowing how many lives I'll be praying for. So while I'm in math class, I'm counting the constant decline of a national population because many citizens are turning into refugees, and many refugees are turning into dead bodies. Dead bodies because they're being decapitated by bloodthirsty businessmen in the Sina Desert who are selling their body parts for money change. I count because I can. I count because I care. I count because the list goes brother, cousin, aunt, uncle, neighbor, friend. It bears repeating, you see, brother, cousin, aunt, uncle, neighbor, friend. While monsters make patients out of bodies, I count. They cut them up, take their organs out, and sell them like candy to children because the consumers always want some. Why do they always want some blood on their hands from refugee bodies? Why do thousands have to flee, hundreds have to die, and me make a poem for you to know about refugees? Bodies floating to shore and organs being sold to strangers. They left looking for salvation, and all they found was death. I'm in math class counting bodies, history class trying to understand my own history, and in English class I'm trying to hold on to my language because it's the only form of bond I have created with my brothers and sisters that have become refugees.
All right, now wasn't that amazing? Did she not just bless your lives? All right, so now we have the last indie piece of the night. I want you guys to give it up for the 2015 DCU Grand Slam champion. She manages to combust mics and brands simultaneously at the same time. Give it up for OG Bobby Johnson!
During war, when the last shot has stopped singing, after the winner has been chosen based on how big of a mess he's made, who asks about the land? Who asks if the ground is still alive and nurses her back to health when a boy battles his own insecurities with your body? It is okay to call it a war zone. This is a letter to the girl I once was, the me who loved a boy who only wanted to make my body a casualty. Dear naivety, you are more than a battleground. You are worth more than a boy who only sees you as a place he can ruin. Don't let him know what a loaded gun of a man looks like before the bang. Before he bangs, he will have a smile as slick as a bullet settling into the click of a revolver. One that craves the grip of a woman's flesh just long enough to make an exit wound. He will only know how to revolve around you long enough to pull out. His hands only know how to make blood splatter of you. His hands have bagged more bodies than they have cradled. So what makes you think you're soldier enough to straighten the bend of a trigger finger run curl? Cause his type of loving isn't worth the folded flag under his bed frame. You are just another name waiting to be caught in limestone. Nothing but a body count, and you aren't even admirable enough to be his first. People see you as a white flag. Glistening surrender to reminisce about when the battle is won. Boys with M14s for tongues know how to eat your insides and spit the shell of you. He only knows the language of click bang, pick bang. His mouth spits slick ammunition that dares your body open and raw. He will leave the wound open and raw. Know the art of strangling a heart purple and calling it a reward. Dear me, I believe this is the boy that you deserve. You are worth more than a boy who is always too ready to stand his ground. You will never be the safety he promises. A gun will always be a gun. We'll always find art in the friction before a catastrophe. A spinning barrel is no place to call home. And any boy who forgets how easily man-made things break isn't worth the bend in your skyline. You are earth. There's a garden underneath your chest capable of growing love for yourself. Grow some love for yourself. Dear boy, thinks he can still control my heart. Silly one who hears his own voice and calls it thunder, I am stronger than you now. Try snapping a tornado and see if it stops. The cockback of your tongue is nothing compared to the earthquake in my chest. It's a bullet to the skull I've got prepared for you.
So, we've got one more piece for you, the group piece, which is lots of fun.
The last piece of our set today, so it's very sad.
But real quick, before we do this poem, I want you all to give a huge round of applause for yourselves. Thank you for being an amazing audience. We wrote this piece specifically for this exhibit, actually. Which is called Freedom Just Around the Corner. For 4 hours we lay on cold pavement, rain spitting in our faces, gray clouds blocking out the sun as the clock keeps ticking.
Second after second.
We are counting down to freedom. Can you hear us? One,
Michael Brown.
Two,
Eric Garner.
Three,
Lenny Brisbane.
Four,
Tamir Rice.
Five,
Kyle Barkley Stairs.
Six,
Dante Parker.
Seven. Eight.
I was riding the subway.
Ten.
I was turning the car around.
Lying on the cold, hard ground, we are shouting to be heard, to be remembered. I do not know if I am allowed to scream this story.
But we must fight together.
We must sing together.
We must remember together.
Until we are all free, no one is. So we count.
One.
Jonathan Farrow.
Two.
Carlos Alshus.
Three.
Kamani Gray.
Four.
Chavez Carter.
Five.
Andy Lopez.
Six.
Rikia Boy.
Seven.
Therese Francis.
Eight.
Wendell Allen.
Nine.
Alonzo Ashley.
Ten.
We are tired of counting bodies,
of counting gunshots,
of counting names.
We are tired of counting.
Those were voices from this past Saturday at the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum in honor of the exhibit Freedom Just Around the Corner, Black America from Civil War to Civil Rights. Nikki Hurd spoke, and she read two of her poems, but the rest of the poets were young poets, members of the DCU Slam Team, Hannah Smallwood, Galen Smith, Millie Mahari, Bobby Johnson, and a group poem, the last poem you heard, also featuring Shayla Johnson and Kenya Newsom. And that will do it for us on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment. The poets will take us out of here today. I'm Esther Averam, and I want to give a special thanks to author and activist Gerald Horn, all the members of the Champion DCU Slam team, and thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella, and thank you so much for listening and calling in. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.